Good evening. Other than when I've been on vacation, that's the first time I've sat with my wife during the song service in about a year and a half. I had to make an emergency run this evening down to Kohl's. I went to get my black shirt out of my closet, and something in there made it shrink. So I had to make a frantic run down to Kohl's to get one that hadn't shrunk already. I think that the humidity builds up in there, and then the heat comes on, clothes just shrink. There's so much that the Bible tells us about the last 24 hours of the life of Jesus. So many things happen and are recorded in the Gospels that it would be impossible to cover it adequately, even in four or five sermons. If you've not already done so, I encourage you sometime this weekend to read all of the accounts from the four Gospels about everything from the Last Supper to the resurrection. Just take an hour and do that. It'll be well worth it for you. It is just such an essential part of our faith, these last 24 hours of Christ's life, that you owe it to yourself to read through it all at this time of year. This is what they call Good Friday. Much of the material which we think of leading up to the crucifixion was actually happening on what we would call Thursday evening or night. The Last Supper, the time of prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane, the betrayal by Judas, Jesus' several trials, all of that happened between early evening Thursday and sunrise on Friday morning. Mostly what occurred on Friday was Jesus scourging, his crucifixion and his death on the cross, followed by his burial. So that is where I'm going to be focused in this sermon this evening. As with last Sunday, I'll be using scripture from several different places, but my primary focus will be in the Gospel of Matthew. If you would follow along with me there, Matthew chapter 27, verses 32 through 54. Matthew 27, 32 through 54. As they went out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. They compelled this man to carry his cross. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull, they offered him wine to drink mixed with gall. But when he had tasted it, he would not drink it. And when they had crucified him, they divided his garments among them by casting lots. Then they sat down and kept watch over him there. And over his head, they put the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." So also the chief priests and the scribes and elders mocked him, saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God deliver him now, if he desires him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness all over the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, "This man is calling Elijah." And one of them, at once ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the others said, "Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook and the rocks were split. The tombs were also opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs, after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. When the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." The physical events of the crucifixion were unbelievable. The first time that I saw the movie, The Passion of the Christ, I was almost sick from just imagining the agony which went on through that brutal beating. But Jesus suffered more than just a horrific beating and a torturous death. As we read in that passage, he suffered also the verbal abuse by everyone around him, even including the men who were being crucified right next to him, men who were guilty of the crimes that they were being punished for. He was mocked by those who had falsely accused him. He was mocked by the soldiers who had savagely beat him. He was mocked by people who were just passing by, who were at least apparently familiar enough with what he taught and what he had said about himself to use those very words to deride him while he hung on the cross. I have no doubt that there would have been among that number of those passing by mocking him, people who had recently given him praise and had thought of him as the promised Messiah. Of course, the chief suffering which Jesus underwent on the cross was not physical or emotional, even though it affected him in both of those ways. The worst suffering that Jesus undertook on the cross was spiritual. As we read in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21, "For our sake, he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." This was undoubtedly the worst part of what he went through, and is probably, in my opinion, what would cause Jesus to cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" But let us not put too little emphasis on the psychological and emotional suffering that he went through on that day, because I think that's worthy to take note of. So worthy, in fact, that it was prophesied about just exactly as the physical abuse had been prophesied, the emotional abuse had been prophesied about too, that he underwent. Jesus was put on the cross, according to Mark 15:25, at the third hour, basically 9 a.m. He hung there for 6 hours before crying out to God. 6 hours of physical torture, accompanied by being derided by nearly everybody around him. The apostles, they'd all abandoned him, although John does come out to be with him right near the end. Other than that, only the women who had followed him and been his disciples, only they stayed by, and they were probably the only ones who didn't mock him who were there. Matthew chapter 27, verses 39 through 44, "And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." So also the chief priests with the scribes and elders mocked him, saying, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross and we'll believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God deliver him now, if he desires him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.' And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way." Can you imagine what it would be like to be treated in this way? I don't really think that we can. I don't think that we can, because every word which they were using to mock Jesus, they were assuming to be pointing him out as a liar. They were using his own words against him to say, "Ha, you were a liar, didn't end too well for you." Every word that they used against him was actually true. And he could have done if he chose to. Jesus could have responded to their hatred and taunts by doing just what they were mocking that he couldn't. He could have had those nails fall right out of his hands, fall right out of his feet, and step down off of the cross, completely healed of the wounds that they had inflicted upon him. He could have shown them without a doubt that they were completely in error. But he did not. He chose not to. He chose not to because the task which he had gone there to perform, and it had nothing to do with showing them how terribly, terribly wrong they were. He literally stayed on that cross so that they might not have to pay the price for how wrong they were. One of the most interesting aspects of all of this was that Jesus was 100% aware of all of this, of everything that was going to happen to him, everything that did happen to him. He was aware of all this while he hung there enduring all of the suffering. He knew that it would happen and that it was prophesied that it would happen. When Jesus cried out in the 9th hour, just before he died, he wasn't just shouting out an emotional plea of agony, although it was that. No, what he shouted out was just one more example of how all of this was in God's plan from the beginning. Jesus, when he cried out to God, was quoting prophecy. It's from Psalm chapter 22, verse 1. It says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning?" Jesus did not end up getting sent to the cross and then suddenly have the entire situation take him by surprise. He didn't suddenly think that this was not going how he had planned it. It was exactly how he had planned it, and it unfolded according to how it had been ordained. When the people were mocking him, he knew that that too would happen. That is undoubtedly one of the reasons he quoted that passage from Psalm 22. Because all of this, all of what was happening to him on the cross was foretold from that passage way back in the Psalms, Psalm 22, verses 6 through 8. "But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by mankind and despised by all the people. All who see me mock me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. He trusts in the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, for he delights in him. The crucifixion and all the horrors that came with it were not evidence of Jesus being caught up in his lies. That's what his enemies and even the random passers-by assumed. They were what he had known he was coming to from before the beginning of time and had been prophesied thousands of years before any of them had ever been born. The cross was the plan, as was his suffering and as were their taunts. Verses 16 and 8 through 18. For dogs encompass me, a company of evildoers encircles me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them. And for my clothing, they cast lots. When Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's not someone who doesn't understand what's going on around him. It's not desperation in a circumstance beyond his control. It is the perfect completion of the act of obedience of the person who set the events in motion and has every intention of seeing them through, as he was the author of these events. There is a teaching in Christianity which suggests that Jesus was abandoned by God on the cross, that the Father turned his face away from Jesus because he could not be in the presence of sin, which Jesus had become. But I do not think this is true, nor even possible. Jesus became sin for us in a spiritual sense, but Jesus was 100% God for the entire time. How could God turn his face away from himself? Jesus and the Father are two aspects of the same thing. And there is more to the psalm which Jesus quoted than what he cried out. Psalm 22, verses 23 and 24. You who fear God, praise him. All you offspring of Jacob, glorify him. And stand in awe of him, all you offspring of Israel, for he has not despised or abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, and he has not hidden his face from him, but has heard when he cried to him. Jesus knew that he would be physically tortured and nailed to the cross. Jesus knew that those who were around him would mock him and taunt him and use his own words to inflict injury upon him. He makes it clear, even while he hung on the cross, he points out that he knew all of this was going to happen. He had warned his followers several times that he would be killed and hung on a tree. It wasn't a surprise to him when he got there. And just in case that there was someone who hadn't heard him make these predictions time after time, while he was back doing his walking ministry, as he hung there on the cross, and only moments before his death, he made it clear once again to anyone who cared to note that this was all part of his plan. By quoting Psalm 22, which made it clear, all they had to do was look. He did all of these things, so that he could have a chance, so that we could have a chance to respond to what he was doing. And in fact, he wasn't even finished in ministering to humanity while they were killing him on the tree. There in Matthew, it speaks of the two robbers who were crucified with him as being some of those who mocked him. But there's another famous passage in Luke in where one of them repents of mocking him. Luke 23, verses 39 through 43. One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Did you ever wonder why this thief had the sudden change of heart? Why he would go from being one of the people who was mocking Jesus, taunting him to come down off the cross, to being someone, probably the only one there, who was defending Jesus as a righteous man who didn't deserve to die on the cross? Did you ever wonder why he made that switch? It's entirely possible that he simply had a change of heart because he'd had a chance to think on what happened. He hung there for 6 hours with Jesus. Maybe he was thinking, maybe I ought not be, you know, cursing him out while I'm about to die. That certainly could have been what happened. But I suspect that there was more to it than that. I suspect that it had to do with the response to the taunts and the torture by Jesus himself. You see, just a very short time before this, Jesus, still ministering to those around him, even to those who were killing him, gave another sort of plea to God the Father, not one on his own behalf by any means. Luke 23, verses 33 and 34. "And when they had come to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him, and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, 'Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.' And they cast lots to divide his garments." It's just my opinion, but I think that this would be enough to change the hardest of hearts. Here you had been mocking the man. Everyone else around you had been mocking him as well. Does he retaliate? No. Instead, he asks that God forgive all of you. Jesus cried out on the cross, yes, due to anguish from all that he was going through. But he cried out that day for you and for me. For the thieves next to him. For the soldiers who had driven the nails into his body. And even for the scribes and Pharisees who had falsely accused him and sent him, so they thought, to his death. He cried out on the cross to make it clear that this was all part of God's plan. And that through all of this was the way that the Father would restore all of us to himself. This was the only way. It wasn't something Jesus wanted to do. It was something Jesus understood he must do, because it is the only way that any of us could go and be restored to the Father. Now today there are a lot of people out there who tell you, oh, there's hundreds of ways to heaven. They're all the same. Jesus knew there was only one way. The only way for us to be reunited with the Father was through His death on the cross, taking our sins there for Him. And to me, it is a mockery for people to say, oh, that's just one of many ways. It is the only way. And it is the way that I would beg for you to accept if you have not done that already. Jesus died on the cross, as we remember tonight. But 3 days later, He rose so that you and I might go to be with the Father. If you have not accepted Christ, I would invite you to come forward as we sing.